regulators. We regulate any stealing of his property. We're damn good, too. But you can't be any geek off the street. Gotta be handy with the steel, if you know what I mean. Earn your keep.
Regulators! Mount up!
And welcome to the eighth edition of the podcast to be named later. I'm Tommy Ransell, coming to you on this Saturday morning after yet another Rays loss. The streak is intact. We're 0-8. We'll get into that. Let's go around the room. Eric Hammond to my left.
How you doing, Tommy?
Doing pretty good. As you've noticed by now, Bobby Fenton is not bringing us in, which means we have a guest in studio. Jason Collette joins us, a member of the D-Rays Bay community for a while. Also contributes on fanball.com and has his own Rays site, our brother site, since I don't want to call you our sister, docoftherays.com. Jason, welcome.
Good morning, guys.
So here we are, eighth edition in.
Eighth loss. Yeah.
It's when we started, it was they get to the ninth
like a
inning.
Joke almost now.
Now it's, they're losing in historical fashion. Matt Garza goes out and has the worst start of his career. I mean, last night it was 2-0. I was feeling good. You know, Zobrist crushes that ball off the teal monster, yeah, whatever you want to call
homer,
it.
Yeah.
Just missed a home run. Garza goes out there and just completely shits the bed. You know, his worst start of his career. I mean, I don't know how to explain it. If you guys see
all
my,
with
you know,
two the, outs too.
With the, you see the recap on draysbay.com right now. There's really nothing you can say about that game. You know, you just look at the strike zone. Everything is up. He didn't have his fastball. He didn't have his curveball. He didn't have anything. And the guys knew it early on. And they just took the pitches. They took their walks.
They didn't chase his curveball or anything.
They didn't chase. They just took it. And then Mike Stanton just cracked the home run. And by that time, the game was over. Even though Sonnenstein did a really good job of keeping them, you know, where they were. He came in and nearly gave the team five innings and really bit the bullet and kind of saved everybody else. So. Just I don't know what else to say about that. I mean,
it was almost like he was trying to reenact the Bull Durham last night. You want to announce his presence with authority, and you throw all these fastballs, and it was almost like Shopik was back there saying, "Hey guys, fastball's coming," because they were teeing off on him like nobody's business.
Yeah, and then like Eric said, when he was throwing the curve, they weren't even chasing. They weren't
no
even
one
thinking
went after
about
one.
It.
I don't think.
And they're just going through this whole turn through the rotation. It's been about two or three turns now, and I think this was Garza's time. We've had Shields, you know, with a terrible start. Price had a bad start, although Neiman had a bad start last out. We've all been through the Davis start. The good thing is that Davis and Shields kind of bounce back, and you kind of hope that Neiman bounces back and Garza can rebound from this. But really, just looking at this stretch, I can't find one thing. It's either the offense is good one night, they take the night off the next, starting pitching is good, then you have a night like last night where they get a two-run lead spotted, and then you just give it up.
I mean, absolutely. If you look at the couple of wins, Price is the only one that hasn't lost yet, but even some of his starts, nobody's been really thrilled with. You look at the start against the Braves, a ton of fastballs, wasn't throwing his other pitches, and got lucky because stranded a ton of runners. The Braves just couldn't move anybody over. And if you look at one of the start against the Blue Jays, where he threw all fastballs
again.
So
he's
3-0, he hasn't looked that great.
Yeah.
And the other starter, you know, three of the other starters have ERAs over 8.5 right now. It's just ever since the Red Sox came in and swept the Rays at Tropicana Field, it's like they remembered maybe we're not as good as the 32-12 that we were or something, because it's been a different team since that sweep.
And we kind of knew that, you know, like going into that stretch, that the starting pitching was going to come down, and we were kind of hoping that the offense would come up, but the offense has done things in spurts, but it's been so inconsistent. I say that we scored 12 runs a series, and 10 of them happened to be in one game, and then the other two, you know, the other two games we're looking at one or two runs. Again, last night we got off to the hot start, and then the offense, you know, I mean, the pitching doesn't show up. So the one consistent we've had is the bullpen, but right now the bullpen is pitching from behind, and while it's good that they're keeping us in the games, the offense is just not, we don't have that late inning magic that we had earlier on in the season.
I mean, perfect. If you look at the Braves series, both teams scored 13 runs in that series, and we only got one win. We had 10 of our 13 runs in one game,
exactly.
And the Braves did a good job of spreading that out. So that was a big difference of the series there.
Yeah, and that Braves series, I mean, we saw another blown call that – It just seems every series, and like I said, we watch the Rays more than anything, so we're not really kind of paying attention to these other series as much, but it seems that every series is a defining call, and it's either way, and it just happened to be that Hank Blaylock with his leg over the plate.
Half his leg scored before.
And that really changed that whole inning, because Hanson was just dealing, and that was our shot to, you know, he was kind of struggling right there.
Cut into it a little bit.
If he could have thrown 25, 30 pitches at him, who knows what happens. And
the game was one out.
Yeah, the game was very winnable. We had our, you know, our better bats.
Longoria was up next.
We had some struggling guys. Well, you know, we had Crawford, Longoria coming up, and that just really changed the complexion of that game.
Absolutely. I mean, you could say calls go both ways. I don't know. I see it going about 80% against the Rays and 20% in our favor lately.
Yeah.
And most of the time, we'll get these beneficial strike zone calls or what have you. But if you think back to the White Sox series when Paul Konerko tagged Longo without the ball in his glove, you know, this at home plate, the calls have been ridiculous the way they've been going. So it's, we'll see. Hopefully, it'll swing the other way in the rest of this month in July, see if it goes the Rays' favor. But it does seem like a lot of calls are going against the Rays the last month.
And, you know, we've been going through this stretch. We're pretty lucky to still be in first place and still tied with the Yankees. But, you know, right behind them, the Red Sox
right now
have just
tied
been,
with, I don't know.
Yeah.
You
know, yeah, by the time everybody's listening to this.
We might be behind by two.
But right now, the Red Sox are surging. And we kind of knew that was going to happen. Everybody kind of counted them out early on. But we kept saying that, you know, this is a really good team and it's just a matter of time. So hopefully that happens with the Rays, because now we were on that hot streak and now we're kind of, you know, slumping 4-6 in the last 10. The Red Sox are just surging. The Yankees are just kind of hanging around with us. We got lucky with, you know, Kyle Kendrick and Jamie Moyer saving our ass a little bit. But it's just one of those stretches where you can look at so many different things, offense, starting pitching. And like I said, the only thing that's been good so far is the bullpen, but you're just waiting for that to regress at some point too. I mean, Soriano and Balfour and Benoit have been great, but you know those guys somewhere along the road, that's going to be a hiccup as well.
I mean, Sonnenstein did a terrific job last night of saving the Rays, because that could have been a disaster. He could have come in and got lit up like he did last time against the Marlins, and they could have had to go four or five pitchers deep into the bullpen. So, you know, hats off to him and Wheeler for doing a great job of trying to keep that game close last night. But again, the bullpen's been the only thing doing the job right now. And for those, you know, people that are believers in karma, and you were ripping on the Red Sox last month when they were 8 games back, you know, karma's a bitch sometimes. And now that they're getting healthy and all they need left, and Ellsbury's the only guy left.
A lot of games
left. Come back. Yeah, a lot of games left.
There's so much time.
We all said that this division was going to have 3 90-game winners in it, and that's
more.
What they're exactly on pace for. It could have 4 if the Blue Jays don't fall apart.
Yeah, and the Blue Jays have kind of settled back a little bit, and that's what happens when you're an all-or-nothing team like that.
They can't hit at all.
Yeah, if the ball is not leaving
the park,
they're struggling, and so they've kind of come back down. But I think they've won 2 in a row or something like that. So they've kind of put themselves back in the race. Really, Baltimore's the only team that's out of it.
Yeah.
But we were kind of where we thought we would be at this point. I guess if you say before the season, we, you know, at this point you're going to be tied with the Yankees, you take it.
Yeah, but
just the way that
how we started and how we're at now.
It's been, I think, looked at it as something 13-17 since that series against the Red Sox. So to be up 20 games and then to play 4 games below 500 since then, it's been tough. But look at the strength of schedule. And I think we've played one. The Marlins are the only team that's been below 500 that we've seen in a long time.
They're a
good team.
Yeah. Their lineup, I mean, when you look at the lineup that they put out there, they have
last
really
night was
lineup.
Odd too, wasn't it?
Yeah, last night was a little bit weird, and I guess it's something we'll have to look at, but 8 of the 9 guys were right-handed hitters against Garza, which is, you know, maybe there's something out there that we haven't noticed, because we paid so much attention to, you know, what our lineup is doing against the other guys. So maybe there's something that we need to be looking at Garza in terms of you know, what he's doing against right-handed batters, because I don't know how much of it was that or just how much of it was him just being completely off. And Brian Anderson on the telecast was, you know, former pitcher, he was noticing something with his back leg and stuff like that. So it could have just been a mechanical thing, and that, you know, that just could have been a coincidence that they had so many righties in the lineup. But whatever it was, hopefully it's like Shields was, and with Davis, hopefully it's just a quick fix, a one time through the rotation thing, and he bounces back at the, you know, after this off day, he'll be back, he'll come into the homestand, and hopefully Niemann gets it going tonight, and Price can continue kind of tiptoeing around the danger.
Fastballs.
Yeah, I don't know where that came.
No,
I mean, I know he had a lot of family, and he was trying to impress a lot of people, but he was
David
just
Kazmir.
He's been very Kazmir. Like
it was almost, if you look back at that game when he threw that 2-2 slider to Prado, and then got Hayward on the changeup. It's almost like at that point in the game he remembered, I throw other pitches, because they were gorgeous pitches, and he had bases loaded, and he gets those two guys back to back, which was stellar. But that's been a trend he's fallen into since that start in Houston, where he went through in the first inning, threw 41 pitches, and had no curveball at all. So he tried to blow it by the Astros, who gave him a 4 spot in the first. Ever since then, he's become a little more heavy on his fastball use. Just something to watch moving forward.
Yeah, and the second time through the lineup against the Braves, he did throw, you know, I think it was 36 of the first 38 were fastballs.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there on, he threw 27 curveballs, so which means maybe that was just a strategy to take advantage of the Braves being a patient team and kind of just trying to get ahead and then working in the secondary stuff. But, you know, it's just been a bad road trip so far, which has been weird because they've been so well on the road. But I guess, again, you expect that to regress. And hopefully going into these last couple games against the Marlins, like I said, it's Saturday. So we have two games against the Marlins. Then we'll have an off day, and then we'll start up, you know, a homestand coming in against some National League West teams. And just, you know, hopefully things can get going. And looking at getting through this homestand, I think we'll see some roster changes coming up at the end of the homestand because we've been carrying three catchers. We've been carrying, you know, some extra guys on the bench. And I think part of that was kind of they didn't know where Kelly Shopik was as far as health, maybe carrying the third catcher.
How long he could catch.
With Navarro kind of being his caddy. But coming up this weekend, after that, I don't see how an American League team in an American League ballpark is going to need three catchers.
Exactly. I mean, it makes less sense in a National League ballpark to carry three catchers in a DH that can't really do anything in the field with Blaylock. So when they get back to the American League, you look down at AAA, Joe Madden said it the other day, Matt Joyce is just banging down the door. And he's got, you know, hitting over 400 in his last 45 at-bats. His OPS is over 1,000. He can actually play the field. A lot of stuff he can do that Blaylock can't. Hey, Blaylock had a double last night. Woohoo! So we'll see maybe one roster move, hopefully, because it really makes no sense. Matt Joyce was a guy that would have made the 25-man roster had he not hurt his elbow. So what is he not doing now that he could do at the major league level? So.
And I think maybe part of that was that he missed so much time in spring that they're kind of giving him a spring training right now. But, mm-hmm. you know, he's at the point where it's enough of. Because then you're not even looking for numbers with him. If that's what it was, is you're just trying to get him, you know, into spring training, you know, kind of get him at bats and get him back into game shape after the offseason and missing so much time. He's at, you know, over 100 plate appearances in the minor league. Yeah. So I think
he's okay to go now. I don't know what they're waiting on anymore.
Yeah, and I think they are just waiting to get through this weekend series, and then
it's like when Kapler, he went down, you know, just. Call him up then. I don't know why they didn't use him at that point.
Yeah, I think they just went with Ruggiano.
For what reason?
To be a Kapler clone.
Play.
Well, you know, maybe with the at-bats angle might be a good one to go with because when he comes up, where are you going to find playing time for him? Because Sean Rodriguez is playing so well. Reed Brignac's playing so well. Now you got, you know, MVB's back
in the puzzle.
You either got to give him the full-time DH job or you got to take at-bats away from Rodriguez and Brignac and Bartlett or Zobrist. So that's really the best playing time for him at the big league roster is going to be to move Blaylock out of the way.
Yeah, and then you're just essentially carrying Blaylock for what? For pinch hitting duties late in the game. So I think there's a couple things, and it's okay to have that extra roster spot. I mean, somebody said it on site, our biggest problem is who's the 25th man on the roster and kind of, you know, what we're going to do with that last bench spot. So I think
good issue to have.
Yeah, it's a good problem to have, and it is going to be an issue because we're lacking so much production at the DH spot. We're way down. It doesn't matter who we put in there, unless we're in San Francisco.
It's been so bad. It doesn't matter.
I think Joyce, kind of pushing that door, is a guy that can you just put in there against right-handers, and he's been hitting very well against lefties. Of course, small sample size, and it's the minor leagues. But with a guy like that, who's going to be a part of your future, I think. I'm almost at the point where you just let that guy just play, and you ignore, you know, left-handed, right-handed. You just let that guy play because. It hasn't worked with the other guys,
right?
I mean, you've given other guys enough chance.
Another good thing, if you look down at what Joyce is doing in the minors right now, at both obviously at High A Charlotte, that's going to be one thing, but at Triple A Durham, he's walking more than he's striking out right now, which is something he's never done. He's always been a guy that has. Walk to strikeout ratio has been right around 0.50, and he's up over 1 right now. That's a good sign for a guy. He's not trying to hack and try to force the issue. He's staying within his skill set and delivering, and like Madden said, knocking on that door quite loudly, just waiting for Friedman and company to open it for him.
Yeah, and I think we're getting to a point where guys have been in slumps so long, and with BJ has shown signs, and then he goes back down, and Carlos, you know, had that streak of all those home runs, and now he's kind of back chasing pitches. I think right now you just have to field the best lineup, regardless of what it is,
and then I think
if Joyce comes up, he's part of that, could be part of that lineup, and then like we mentioned earlier, that middle infield, kind of the three-man thing.
And,
you know, with Jason Bartlett, who's been the starter for the past couple of years, and a lot of people feel he's the glue and stuff like that, and he's the guy that makes his team go. But Bartlett, he's been unlucky somewhat, but when you got guys like Rodriguez and Brignac who have just been so good, I don't know how you can justify taking those guys out of the lineup, especially when Bartlett hasn't been as good defensively and he hasn't been as good offensively, not even up to career numbers this year.
Yeah, I mean, you saw it the first game he was back in the Braves series. He cost the two-run double from Gloss. Yeah, that's a ball that Brignac gets to. Yeah. And the infield single by Prado, that's another ball that Brignac would get to. So at this time, I know it hurts because, you know, Bartlett was so good last year statistically, but it just isn't cutting it this year. Yeah, he has been unlucky, but if he's stealing at-bats away from Brignac against right-handed pitching, I just don't understand it. He can't take away that many at-bats from him.
And like you said, it's not that the defense is something, because, I mean, we've had like B.J. Upton is a guy that you can say, all right, look at his offense. He's just been down, and it's been...
Brendan Harris.
Yeah. But, you know, Josh Wilson. His defense is just so good. You know, with Upton, that you just keep him in the lineup and right. you just he gives you value there. With That's Bartlett, he's not giving not, you that. I mean, yeah, right now, Brignac is a superior player offensively and defensively, and Rodriguez is even, you know, even though he's playing on that second base side, if you keep Bartlett in there and you move Brignac, I mean, that's unfair to Rodriguez, who's been one of the key producers this whole month, in a month that's been so inconsistent.
Sure, and where would this team be without the young players? And with Jaso and with Rodriguez and Brignac and what have you, the offense, we talk about how bad it's struggling. Those three guys have been really carrying the water for the club right as soon as they got inserted into the lineup, and Rodriguez has definitely earned the extra exposure he's received recently and getting in the lineup, hitting sixth last night. So he's no longer he's worked his way up from the bottom of the lineup and is definitely helping out.
Yeah, and as far as the lineup, I mean, I don't even. We yeah, I mean, I know. In general, the order of the lineup really doesn't. It doesn't do much on a night-to-night basis. But I've just, you know, everything the Rays,
at least,
everything the Rays do, you kind of try to figure out why they're doing it, and you kind of just like, okay, I could see why he's doing that. But as far as the lineup, why Zobrist hits behind Pena and these guys, you know, fifth or sixth, when he's one of your best three hitters and you should be getting the best. I don't know, but again, when you're sitting with the best record in baseball, you kind of just say, oh, well, you know, it's worked so far.
I mean, a local radio show is missing out on a great competition. You know, guess the Rays lineup and win a free ticket to tonight's game.
Yeah. Oh, they would never.
There was one time 14 straight different lineups. Yeah. 14 straight different lineups. It's no just one craziness. Went.
Because he, even if he keeps the same players in the lineup, yeah, there's no guarantee that they're going to be. I mean, Jaso, that I remember seeing the time that he was leading off.
It's leading like, off Jaso.
Where does that?
Oh, Kevin Goldstein. Kevin Goldstein was nuts on Twitter when he saw that Jaso was leading off that one game. He's somebody explain this one to him.
And I mean,
he gets on base.
It does
fine.
Make sense when you think about it, but it's just you know, that's just a name that. You never thought coming into the season that, oh, John Jaso would be leading off, and you could be able to justify
right.
it.
For the best team in baseball would have him as
a leader. We talked about this a couple weeks ago where you know, he was batting behind Longoria for protection, and it's like, oh, yeah, well, that kind of makes sense. You know, putting Jaso up there as one of your best four hitters, and it made a lot of sense. And I think that's part of the reason is what you said. We've had these guys, you know, step up because we've had Pat Burrell, who's in San Francisco now. You know, Carlos Pena is still inconsistent. Same with B.J. Upton. So we've had to have these kind of unsung heroes, and it was kind of a lot like 2008 where guys, you know, Hinsky came out and had a really good season.
Floyd did pretty well.
Ibar, you know,
Ibar
now,
did great in 08.
You know, much maligned Ibar now. Who's
Can we have that Willie Ibar back, please?
Yeah.
Sometime soon.
And it's funny with Ibar because he gets a lot of flack, but, I mean, it's kind of hard to – you know, get something going, and we see all this with Gomes and stuff like that. When these guys are not getting consistent at bats, and you just say, okay, go out there and 0-for-3 once a week, you know, that adds up. But, you know, if he played 3 or 4 times a week, you know, you can throw in an 0-for-3 there and have a struggle. And a lot of Ibar's at bats have come in pinch hit roles, which we know is tougher to do than starting. So I think Ibar is a little bit penalized for being Madden's, you know, pinch hit guy. But where do you put that guy?
You can't put him in the field. Yeah, I mean, maybe as a right-handed bat against tough lefties for Pena, but you're taking a big defensive hit there. You can't put him at second base. It's even worse of a defensive hit.
Just for a couple of innings.
He used to be good. Now he's it's gone.
It's gone. Maybe you want to look back to a specific incident in
the baseball classic.
Baseball classic, when he made that horrific error. Yeah, we made that horrific error at the corner. Cost the game.
Netherlands, yeah.
I don't know. Whatever it is, but he is. It's just somebody you see him in the field, you kind of wince when he plays in the field. But you're right. It's tough to get hot when you're only getting 4 or 5 at-bats a week.
And that speaks to the depth, because a guy like Ibar on some other teams, you could look at a couple other teams and he would be getting significant playing time.
Even though
the Rays are struggling offensively, you still got to keep your core guys out there. Like you said, you're not going to take Pena out. I mean, there's certain matchups.
You're not going to take him out.
Yeah, you got to. I mean, even though these guys are underperforming, you're still going to put them out there, and hopefully those guys regress to career norms. Again, it goes back to what happened last night, what happened this week. You really just can't explain something. Sometimes it's just a tough stretch of baseball for this team.
Yeah, let's hope it ends soon. I mean, like we said earlier, the strength of schedule, we haven't seen a below 500 team in quite some time, while the Yankees and Red Sox have been cleaning up against the Indians and the Orioles and the Astros and the Diamondbacks. So that's some of what explains this, everybody catching up, but at the same time,
it evens out eventually.
I mean, we played those teams too. We played a lot of those teams too. Yeah. I know the Yankees have played Baltimore a little bit more than we have. And, like we talked about, going into the All-Star break, we're going to see Cleveland. And then looking, even ahead, hopefully we're still in it come September. But looking at that end of September schedule, it could be favorable for us if we're in it and we're in the thick of it with these other teams.
Absolutely. Those last 10 games, the Royals, the Orioles, the Mariners, and then that month starts off with the Orioles. So 13 games out of, 13 out of, I think it's 28 games are against those teams. So it keeps it close.
Weather the storm, weather the storm now, and
it's just June. So
at some point, I mean, even bad teams go on a good stretch, and we definitely don't have a bad team. We have a good team here, and it's just been like you said, the past 30 games. I think you said it's just been a struggle, but that's look at our first 40,
not even
50
a quarter of the year. So it's
Well, what's disappointing, we've had a lot of home games too. We're still only 2 games above 500 at home, and that's got to stop.
And when you look at that, it's been pretty much the pitching that's kind of been inconsistent, and that's pretty strange because the Trop is a pretty neutral ballpark, and you think those guys would be comfortable pitching. They know the ins and outs, they know what kind of balls they need there. So that's been really strange.
And 2 games above this week, coming in the Padres and the Diamondbacks. Diamondbacks should win that series. That they're not a good team. They're better than their record, but the Rays are still the better team. But that Padres series, that's going to be tough.
Padres can pitch.
Their pitching is badass, and their bullpen is unbelievable. You talk about how good ours is. Gregerson, Adams, Ryan Webb, Heath Bell, the back end. Everybody. Their bullpen is murder. You have to get through their starting pitcher. If you don't get that starting pitcher knocked out, if they get 6 innings out of their starter, they make that 7th, 8th, and 9th look very short.
And then the good thing is that their offense is not...
It's not great.
It's not great.
But it's... I don't know.
So hopefully... Like we were talking about,
Adrian's in town.
Yeah, hopefully, I mean, they can just leave
him
here.
Keep him here, that'd be cool.
hopefully our starting pitching can kind of take advantage against them. And like you said, shut them down for those 6 innings. And hopefully our guys can get in there. Because, looking at their bullpen, like you said, their bullpen is probably better than ours. I'm not just looking at numbers. I'm just going on based off the names and stuff like that. But when we get to this, the 7th, 8th, and 9th inning, I have a lot of confidence in the guys we have, and it's pretty strange given that we don't have J.P. Howell, but Balfour has just been amazing, Benoit, and then Soriano has just been lights out at the end of the game. And even the other guys like Wheeler and Choate, when used properly, they've been really good.
I mean, you think about this, that one bad stretch that Choate had late April, early May.
Early in the year,
that's pretty much been the only bullpen thing any of us can legitimately complain about, because the bullpen has done everything that they've been asked for, and then even without J.P. Howell, they've done better than a lot of us thought they'd do. So that's good. But that Padres series, again, they're kind of like the Seattle Mariners, except they actually score. I was out in Seattle and San Diego last week and went to the game between the Mariners and the Padres and watched it. And the pitching and the defense from the Padres is unbelievable. Their outfield defense, when they've got Gwynn and Aaron Cunningham, guys like that out there, can close a lot of gaps quickly. But their offense does just enough to give their pitchers and their bullpen.
Adrian's all
spot.
They have out there in that offense. I'm looking at it now, and it's bad.
Let's just walk him.
If they wanted to give Hundley's, him the four finger trip down first base every at bat, do it. Yeah. It really wouldn't bother me.
And I'm sure Joe Maddon, the mad scientist that he is, we'll look at stuff like that. And we saw him give that intentional walk to
Hamilton in Texas.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, Chase Headley shouldn't scare you along those projections.
He's been awful.
I mean, a lot of Chase Headley's stats have been early in the season. He has nine steals, but I think eight of them came in April. So he hasn't done much. And Kyle Blanks, they don't know what they're going to do with. Huntley's not doing much.
No. Harrison's not doing anything. Doesn't
Gritty, David Eckstein, you know, those types of guys. So again, if you give them the 4-15, finger pass, make those guys beat you.
And even against a good team, you know, coming, like we were talking about, coming home, you should win every, you know, I feel a team like the Rays should win every home series. Mm-hmm. Two out of three. I mean, we're not asking for sweeps.
Nope.
But they've barely been doing that. It's been splitting a home series against the Royals.
And White Sox.
And White Sox, yeah.
White Sox, and then just, you know, winning two out of three one series and then, you know, dropping two out of three the next.
Yep.
And the Chop has been such a home field advantage for this team that you just have to think that at some point it's going to click for these guys. Even now I'm looking at the offense. Pretty much Longoria is the only one that's really killing the ball at home.
Right.
And you know, we at some point there was a notion that the Chop suppressed right-handed hitting, and you know Longoria is proving that to be false. But we have so many guys just so inconsistent. I think that's been pretty much the most frustrating part about this 30-game stretch. It's so inconsistent. Offense looks like it's going to break out, and it doesn't. Certain players look like they're going to break out, and they don't. And I think that's just been the biggest thing that you can point your finger to. It's not individual, you know, like, oh, okay, this guy is going to do this. It's just been on a nightly basis. You don't know if they're going to score 10 runs and give up 10 runs or they're going to, you know,
right,
win 2-0.
I mean, you mentioned it earlier, you know, with Pena. Pena, early in the season, chasing a lot of pitches. Settled down, started banging things out of the park. But then over the last 4 or 5 games, he's chasing those high fastballs again, chasing those outside pitches again. Zobrist has had the same kind of trouble where he's chased elevated pitches, low pitches, away pitches, because people are throwing him a lot of junk. He's trying to hit the first straight thing he sees. So that's been tough to put together. But if you take away the home series against the Blue Jays, any one of them, you've got a split against the White Sox, a split against the Royals, a sweep at the hands of the Red Sox. You lose to the Marlins. So the home series of late just really have not been good. And thankfully, you know, people talk about games in April not counting much. You know, thankfully, the Rays played very well in April, because it's definitely come back to help them out right now. Without that April record, probably be 4 games back right now.
Yeah, and that's kind of where we were last year. We, you know, struggled out of the game.
Yeah, 8-14.
But then we played pretty well at this stretch of the season last year, and it still wasn't enough. And then by late August, when the Kazmir trade was made, you know, they were 4.5 games out. But
they gave up there, right?
Oh, totally.
Yeah, it was a total salary dump that way. And I think the hot start, even though right now we're tied, and like I said, by the time you could be listening to this, we could be behind or we could be ahead. Just the fact that we're still in it and we're struggling, you know, that we've gone through this 30 game stretch and we're struggling. And we all knew, I don't think anybody thought we would play under 500 over this 30 game stretch. But that the fact that we're still in it, it definitely makes you feel good. I mean, that's all you can ask for is your team to be in and then hopefully get to the playoffs and then see what happens there.
Yep.
But coming into the end of this month, hopefully they ended up on a hot streak, because then we're going to get into July and then the All-Star break, and then you're going to have all these trade rumors.
Trade deadline stuff.
And we're going to have some stuff coming up this week, and we could talk about it because Eric had the post this week. You know, is this the year that you go ahead and go all in and make a big deal?
Maybe not, you know, all in, but, you know, enough of a move. Yeah.
I mean, I think what's going to happen, you're going to hear media types talking about, let's add Lance Berkman, let's add Derek Lee, let's add those guys. There's no payroll flexibility for that. I looked at it yesterday. If you wanted to add Berkman right now, it's $9.5 million of what's left on his contract.
Yeah.
Lee's got $6.5 million.
The Astros aren't going to pick that up. Yeah, the Cubs aren't going to pick that up.
Exactly. Luke Scott, those types of guys. Austin Kearns, you know, Russell Branyan. Those are the types of names you got to look at. Good skills, affordable skills. You can bring them in. There might be that kind of payroll flexibility and what have you, but you're going to hear a lot of, you know, 2008, Bill Chastain told us we had Jason Bay. We didn't get Jason Bay. Last year, we did absolutely nothing at the trade deadline. We did it in August. So this year, if this is definitely the year of being all in, then they've got to do something.
And another thing, not only payroll costs, just what's it going to cost in terms of prospects. And the Rays are going to be in every trade rumor. We're going to hear every name that
can
comes
be,
available.
Yeah.
Because they can, because they have the ability, if they wanted to go out
and get
anybody that they wanted.
Whoever they want, it doesn't matter.
You know, looking at our farm system compared to the teams that are in it, you know, we can go. So, of course, we're going to be, oh, the Rays need a bat. Every big bat that comes available is going to be, oh, a possible destination. And I love that, possible destination. You know, people use that and then they just run with it. But I think, like you said, more likely a Luke Scott type, where it's not going to cost you much in terms of payroll. It's not going to cost you much in terms of prospects. And you get a guy that's already in the American League East.
Canerco cost? Because
that's a good question. I forgot to check that one out. I think he'd probably be sitting close to about $5 million. But
that's not terrible for them. No,
not at all, because that would definitely help. Right-handed, it would definitely help against the perceived trouble against lefties.
Available, too. Exactly. They've talked about that openly.
And then when we talk about the payroll, you know, just making the playoffs is such
a boost.
An influx of cash that if you're going to say, okay, we'll spend a little bit more money here, but if we really feel this guy is going to push us over the top and get us into the playoffs, then, you know, the money will work itself out. But I think more importantly for the Rays, in terms of what's going to cost, I think payroll is definitely a big issue. Like you said, a guy like Berkman is probably not going to happen because there's just so much. But a guy like, you know, Canerico or Scott, where the salary is a little bit less and the prospects will be a little bit less, I think that's something that we'll look at.
Yeah, I just checked it out. Canerico's going to be about 5.5 to 6 if you took him right now. So
and if you feel that Canerico is a guy that's going to push you over the top,
then do it.
Then you'll make your money on the back end as far as getting into the playoffs. And I think another rating the White Sox, I guess, is Matt Thornton.
We've talked about.
I'd love to have Matt Thornton.
I would too. But
I think that's
he's under. What? He's got what? Two more.
I think he has this year
left, or
this year and next.
One more year left on his contract. Yeah,
and
I
think he'll
get him then. Yeah, I think. But.
Get them both. I don't know.
Be great.
Yeah, but that would cost some prospects, and I think Thornton, the bounty on him would be, you know, a little bit more than an agent. Canerico is going to be a free agent at the end of the season.
I mean, that's going to be a guy that all three teams in the AL East are going to want to take. And what's always maddening about what happens with the Yankees and Red Sox, they never have to give up their best prospect to get the guy they want. They always seem to be able to, because they can absorb more salary, we'll give up a B-level prospect or a bunch of handfuls of C's, and we'll get the guy we want, like how they got Victor Martinez and such last year. So, and that's always something to watch out.
And for the same thing for the Rays, they always come and ask for the farm, like, you know.
Oh, always.
You know, when the Jason Bay thing, it was Brignac and Niemann. But when you look at what you know, they ended up paying for him, it wasn't that much. It was a couple of, you know, 4A guys.
Oh, exactly.
A couple of arms. I mean, I don't even think Craig Hansen is still pitching.
not healthy. But, you know, it's funny. Back when that deal was going to happen, remember how all of us were, many of us were like, oh, Brignac and Niemann, do it. Done.
Yeah, do
where would the Rays be right now without those two?
Yeah.
Well, we might have room for Aki then. Because
Aki
is now.
Aki just got cut by the Pirates. Poor Aki. Yeah.
And we talked about this earlier, but I don't know how a guy coming off knee surgery. The Pirates didn't ask for
major knee surgery. It's not like
major
a
knee surgery.
Scope or anything.
He came back early, which it was good. And he played in September and he played pretty well. But before the trade was made, they didn't even ask for.
And it wasn't like they were saving any money. They were actually taking on money because Jesse Chavez wasn't being paid that much. And so,
no, he's a league minimum guy.
Yeah, so they were taking on $4 million. And they did that without passing a physical. But that's why the Pirates are the Pirates.
Yeah, and if Aki wants to come back and take Joe Dillon's spot, I haven't talked to anybody about it officially.
Triple A jobs, that'd be great.
Yeah, I mean, just to have Aki in the system, you know, and his
people
dog.
People love him here, yeah.
His dog Nuts or whatever his dog's name is. All right. Well, guys, without Bobby driving the ship,
weird
to go from here. I mean, it's probably going to be a shorter edition than normal because we're just really – what else is there to talk about?
When you're losing like this, it's kind of tough to stay motivated.
Yeah, it's hard.
And, I mean, we've kind of just beaten every subject to death as far as, you know, looking at these individual players hoping for regression. And that's really all you can say is that when the good – it's going good – you know, it's never going to stay that good, and when it's going bad, at some point it's going to turn around.
Sure, I mean, the teams definitely had peaks and valleys. April was a peak, and, you know, last, as far as the win-loss-wise, has been a valley. But offensively, the team is playing better than they were in May when it was perceived struggle. So the numbers are there. It's just a consistency knot. They've got to find that area between the peak and the valley and stay there.
And hopefully that's what we have coming up. Like you said, we've talked about the Padres series and the Diamondback series. And hopefully this team can get on that run. And hopefully next week
they can win a game.
When we come in here, on Saturday morning
on Bare Naked Ladies Day. Woohoo!
Yeah, we've tried
I'm going
everything.
To that game.
All right, Eric's going to go to that game. I don't know. We're going to have to do a sacrifice.
If I had $1 million, I'd go to that game too.
Yeah. See, there you go.
We tried to not talk about the podcast.
Puns. Yeah,
we've changed up the intro music. We've changed up
host.
Yeah, we kicked Bobby out of the studio. I mean, I've missed games.
I've missed weeks.
Games.
I drove 120 miles Michael over here to help. It didn't help. Yet.
Maybe yeah, it's Michael's fault.
I'm starting to think it's me because I've been here every time. We need to switch up the day or the time or something.
Maybe we need to switch up the chairs. Maybe.
Yeah, true.
Maybe,
yeah.
We could do that.
We've been in these.
Maybe somebody can get the Sports Nation, the Yankees and the Red Sox to start their own podcast, and maybe they can start losing some games too. Because this is this is not a good trend.
Buy us out,
whatever it is. But
quit the podcast.
Yeah, forget it. We're done. We're just gonna walk off. If it happens
Sternberg,
next week,
just pay us off and we'll quit.
It'll be helping the team.
Yeah,
and then you'll go start a podcast for another team and do even better, just like Pat Burrell's done.
Yeah.
So
yeah, we'll start a National League podcast and just really be really good.
Arlen's podcast. Yeah.
All right, fellas, I think that's pretty much all it. Right. For Bobby Fenton, who's somewhere trying to get in the studio, but we won't let him in. I'm Tommy Rinsell, Eric Hammond,
and Jason Collette.
Michael on the boards. Thank you.
All right, guys. Hopefully next week we'll talk about the win.